The Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football.
Hello, and welcome to the Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football. Well, we said it was going to be a dull round of games, and we were completely wrong. There weren't just goals, there were great goals. Too many of them for us to talk about, almost. Along with a big upset or two as well. We're here to look back on what was a surprisingly exciting fixture card, and I am joined, as always, by Cameron Wilson in Shanghai. How are you doing, Cam?
Steve, not bad. Hi, everybody.
And Brandon Chemers in Beijing. Brandon, welcome back to the pod.
Always good to be here, Steve.
Everyone's chipper after some good results over the weekend. And, I mean, it was quite the weekend for truly spectacular goals as well. Cam, I'm going to come to you first. Which was your favourite and kind of why?
I have to say it was Hulk's goal for SIPG. It was just the kind of goal which you expect Hulk to score. A kind of rocket from long range. It looked like it was going to bust the net. So from a spectacular point of view, from an entertainment point of view, for the neutral, I'd say Hulk's goal was definitely the most spectacular.
That's fantastic. It's one of those that you watch it on a kind of GIF replay and you can barely see the ball. It's moving that quickly. It's quintessential Hulk, moving from kind of busting his shirt through to busting the net. Another vote for Hulk, Brandon, or are you going to go with something closer to home or even a bit of Talisca?
I'm actually going pretty far away from home. While I'd like to say Jiang Yuning with his effort there, it's an excellent goal, but I think Solnes's goal, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, was Shenzhen from a really crazy angle. Just a beautiful shot. Beautiful goal all around.
Yeah, really. I mean, for listeners who haven't checked out the highlight reel from the latest round of games, you really should. You're in for a treat with many of these goals. But ultimately, well, there was a big upset, which we are going to talk about, but I think we need to start at the very top of the table. Brandon, fairly routine wins for both Guan and Evergrande in the end. They've both won their first four. They haven't conceded a single goal, remarkably. I mean, should we be worried about the CSL getting a little bit too stratified at this point?
I don't think so. You know, Guan, I said before this game against Jiangsu that this was going to be their hardest game so far. It turned out to be not so difficult, but it was tight for a long time. Guan hasn't really played anyone, to be honest, so it's not really a big surprise they are where they are right now. And equally, the same can pretty much be said for Evergrande. The majority of the teams that they've played outside of the Derby are all sides in the second half of the table right now, a lot of them towards the bottom of the table for both teams. And so it's not really a surprise where they are. I think it's a bigger surprise what the red half of Shanghai did against a pretty bad opponent over the weekend.
Yeah, and we can come back to the Guangzhou derby, but I mean, I guess the headline maker, not just for that Hulk goal, Cam, is a huge slip-up at home for Shanghai International Port Group. I mean, do we write this off as a bad day at the office? Is that kind of defence that we've had concerns about finally catching up with them? Is it all down to an off day for the keeper? I mean, fantastic home goal at the end, but how worried should they be?
I think it was just a bad day at the office. We've seen SIBG make a pretty solid start to the season up until before this weekend, and there was a lot of doubts, of course, after Wuley left, so I don't think there's any alarm bells be ringing. Yanjun Ling is, to be fair to him, he's normally a very, very solid, very good keeper. He'll be completely devastated by what was a tragic weekend for Shanghai football in terms of his own goal, but other than that, I don't think they are going to be too alarmed just yet.
A tragic weekend for Shanghai goalkeeping with Li Shuai putting in a customary performance as well. I mean, Brandon, should we be giving some more credit to Chongqing? I mean, we all get annoyed at football media for always talking about the big teams that have slipped up and not giving the underdogs enough credit, and here we are doing the same thing. It's nice to see someone having a go at one of the big sides, actually. Is kind of Jordy Cruyff starting to really show something over in China?
I don't think so, but what I would say is I sort of disagree with Cammy. If you look at the other two sides, you know, the title contenders, Guan and Evergrande, as you mentioned before, haven't given up a goal yet. SIPG giving up two against Jiangsu, one against Hebei, and now three against Chongqing. I think we have to start getting a little concerned about their defense. But granted, Chongqing, they have some really fast, really quality foreigners, and they do a great job playing together. So they are going to threaten teams, especially a team that, if the defense isn't really up to par, Chongqing is going to abuse some sides with their skill, with their speed, and you know it's not. It did take a pretty big mistake, but still, it was they were up 2-0 for much of the game.
Yeah, they got off to a roaring start, and then, you know, they got pegged back, but they still kind of came through with the winner in the end. Credit to them, and they're sitting comfortably in mid-table at this admittedly very early stage. The other big game, Cam, we had a preview of the Evergrande RNF Derby down in Guangzhou. We talked about how historically it's a game full of goals. It was one of the more kind of measured, controlled, and uneventful derbies of recent years, really.
It was. Guangzhou derbies been very exciting. To be some cracking games over the last few years. RNF have had such an impressive record against Evergrande, one of the best of any team, if not the best in the CSL, but this game in particular didn't seem to quite have the same spark. I think what's interesting with Evergrande is, as Brian said, they've not conceded a goal and they've won all four games, and this is despite having a policy of deliberately not starting their best team. It's been interesting to see that they've managed to win these games only starting two foreigners. It'll be interesting to see if they maintain that as the season goes on.
Although, speaking of those self-imposed rules, they did, of course, I believe, not quite rotate enough of their 18-man squad for this game. Brandon, do you think we're going to see them administering a bit of punishment bingo on themselves for that?
Well, I mean, you did see them, you know, Zheng Zhe back from injury. Huang Bowen was back in the starting lineup. So you did see them bring in a couple of the older players that haven't really featured much this year. But yeah, it's an odd situation there. And, you know, I'm not sure how strict they're going to stay to the policy as the season goes on.
It's pretty much a shame that the league's going to have an asterisk over it this year because one team's like making a point of not picking their best team. I think that's really sad. I think they can't because they've come up with these really stupid and ridiculous rules, and it turns out that they're so stupid they can't even follow them themselves. So I think it makes a mockery of the game here, and I think Evergrande are doing the game a disservice.
I really think it's going to be interesting to see if they stick to these rules if and when they start struggling a little bit as well. I mean, they have had a kind fixture list so far, and there's going to be plenty of stress ahead. But we'll save that discussion for when they do maybe hit a bump in the road or two. Another huge win for Shenhua, Cam. Was this a case of a really good home performance at Hong Kong, or just evidence of how bad Renhe are and they're a side who are really struggling this year so far?
It's more a reflection of how bad Renhe are. I was really surprised by the margin of the victory. Although I did predict before the game very clearly, I said Shenhua will definitely concede a goal, because anytime any team comes to play Shenhua and they've either not won for ages or they've not scored a goal, or there's some kind of hoodoo they need to get off their back, they will manage to do it against Shenhua. So when I saw like Li Shuai just struggle to just such a easy shot, he couldn't even get down and save. It bounced on the turf twice before he even reached him. It wasn't even a hard shot. So I hate to focus on the negative, but you can't ignore the fact that Shenhua's two victories came against probably the two worst teams in the league, Henan and Beijing Renhe. At least the two worst teams so far. But, you know, on the positive side, it was a very, some pretty good confidence building result for the team. For Gio, had his 201st game. He's also set a new scoring record for the club, so yeah, there's some positivity there, but I still think this season Shenhua's going to struggle badly.
I think they're going to be the ultimate measuring stick this year. Go on, Brandon.
Talked about all the good goals from the weekend, and just watching that Diop goal was just such it just sort of sums up Li Shuai and Shenhua for you. It was just such a shocker. But it's strange because Shenhua sort of they struggle and then they have a way of finding results. Is it last year or 2 years ago, the 8-2 defeat of Liaoning, where they just they put in this really dominant result against they crushed a side. But I don't think we should have a lot of optimism about Shenhua just because of this result.
Also, but Li Shuai, he actually was quoted in the Shanghai media this week, early last week, saying that he himself believes that at this stage in his career, he should be a backup goalkeeper. So that is a reflection of how terrible the goalkeeper situation is at Shenhua. I've spoken to some fans. This is a typical thing. They've got a guy called Chen Zhao, who's under 23 keeper. Now, this guy was signed from he was playing in Portugal in one of the lower divisions. I don't know how much game time he was getting, but he was brought back to China by Shenhua. He was paraded. And now he's not been given a game once. Even in end-of-season dead rubbers, he didn't get a game. Last season in the ACL, in the last game against Sydney, it was a dead rubber. But Chou Shenzhong got a game. And Chou Shenzhong's contract was up at the end of the season, so what was the point? And this guy doesn't even get a game. And of course, everybody says, if you talk to fans or some media, they say, yeah, but he's not very highly rated. It's like, well, why did you sign him then? Did you not do any scouting? Do you not go and check out what the players are like? Why have you got now a guy on the bench as Shen Jun? This guy's 32. He's played two CLCL games in 9 years. Now, how can he be better than an under 23 keeper? So it's just a good example of some of the strange things that happened in Chinese football as regards players being signed from Europe and goalkeepers and so on and so forth. It's quite odd.
And yeah, I mean, you've heard of the come and get me plea in football. Li Shuai possibly with the first ever come and drop me plea there. We've always got to have a little bit of innovation. I think we do, as much as I'd love to talk about Shenhua all day, we can move on to talk a bit more about just how bad Renhe were. And I think we had a good question that sums up both the Guangzhou derby and this game from Roy Tadmore on Twitter. Which Serbian coach will lose their seat first at this point? Will it be Stanojevic with the harsh pressure from all six of the away fans travelling to Hong Kong? I think he's been kind there. Or Stojkovic leading RNF to their worst opening in six seasons? They're both going to be under a degree of pressure, aren't they, Brandon?
Yeah, for sure. But I think Stanojevic at Renhe is definitely going to be under far more pressure. The 0 points in four is just a little too much. And this side, I mean, against Shenhua, there were issues with their foreigners and everything, but still, there's their issues are far deeper. At the same time, with RNF, they did spend some money in the offseason, so their current situation is pretty shocking. But I do think RNF is going to be a little more patient to give some time for things to work themselves out.
Now, I know, Cam, that you're going to complain about talking of managers losing their jobs, so I want to change the focus a bit. We'll look at some of the big games that are coming up next weekend, and one that caught my eye, moving away from big-name managers to big-name players, is in Shandong against Dalian. We've got a tie between a couple of teams who are failing to live up to expectations at the moment, and there's obviously a lot more to it than the big headline names, but neither Fellaini nor Hamsik have really kind of caught fire yet. Do you think that those big signings have maybe even destabilised their clubs at this point? Because, I mean, the pressure's on to deliver immediate results.
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's a very interesting game between two teams who are, I'd say Shandong's definitely the stronger squad, but Dalian's got pretensions to move up the table and potentially try and get in the top six or even ACL. Neither the player Hamzik Fellaini, they've not really set the head of their lights so far. That's really pretty common in China. There's sometimes players come in with a honeymoon period and they get off to a great start and they make an instant impact, but then as they discover idiosyncrasies of Chinese football, and then maybe they think their teammates are not quite as good as, or they're not quite as professional as what they're used to playing with in Europe, they kind of form dips, but it's not worked like that for these guys. And of course, there's been ample examples of players who came to China and just flopped. I remember Barry Osh at Evergrande a few years ago, Diamante as well, the Italian. So big players means you don't always succeed. But of course, it's early days.
It is early days indeed. I know, Brendan, you've never really been that hot on Dalian, but are you a bit surprised that Shandong are struggling early this year, kind of domestically and internationally? I mean, did they overachieve a little bit last season? Should we have these high expectations of what is a relatively young team?
I mean, I think part of it, too, is that Shandong, of the sort of top sides, you know, they haven't really played anyone either, but I think it was just sort of I was sort of surprised because I talked about last week about the match against Shenzhen being a bit of a challenge. You know, they're close to each other on points. I think that really what it comes down to is just that we've talked a lot before about how, you know, some of the sides struggle with ACL and the CSL. And I think that's just the situation with Shandong this year, that the ACL is a little too much for them. And that's causing them problems. I think they're going to sort of even out, but they aren't quite on the same level as Guan, as Evergrande, as SIPG. And I think that's just going to play itself out. They're just going to be on that second tier, I think, for the rest of the season.
Yeah, you mentioned the ACL there, and it's obviously a pivotal week, potentially for all of the Chinese sides, actually. We'll take a breath and recap where they're at halfway through the group stage in the pod next week. One of the other big fixtures, Cam, two teams that are not going to be troubling the ACL anytime soon. We have the Tianjin Derby coming up. I mean, both Taidar and Tianhai are in all kinds of you know, messy situations. What do you think the Tianjin FA would prefer here, and do you think we're going to see a harmonious derby?
It's not a derby which has a lot of fire in it, because as most people know, if you don't know, Tera has been the team in Tianjin for a very long time. Tianhai, very recent addition to the scene. There's a general feeling that Tianhai are not all they're meant out to be. I mean, there's this ongoing story about how they're officially or unofficially or otherwise the under 23 development team. I just think that there's just a lack of real substance to the rivalry. You know, some people might talk about merger. I mean, I'm sure the CFA would, not the CFA, the Tianjin FA would probably be happy with that, or at least certain elements, but I'm sure the Tera fans would not be amused by that suggestion at all.
That said, I think there was a bit
If they did merge, they'd have a decent team.
No, I mean, I think they definitely have a decent squad. I think that you know, I don't think Tianhai is as bad as they have played so far. I believe there's a bit of an incident at the match over the weekend between Tianhai and Taida fans. And while Taida has been sort of the side in Tianjin for a long time, they've also had issues with support, especially since moving to the Olympic Stadium. And, well, Trenzhen, the old Tianhai, had really good support. However they got it, they had decent numbers in support. So I do think that the rivalry does sort of exist. There's definitely some tension there. It might not have boiled out into the dangerous streets like in Shanghai, but I wouldn't poo-poo this rivalry so much.
I can't wait to see the only Tianhai rep Tianjin banners coming out. Those are some good games to look forward to next week. There's some more big stories for us to look back on that didn't actually take place on a football field last week. But before we do that, it's time for our regular break and Phenomenon of the Week section.
The Wild East Football Phenomenon of the Week.
Now, we had a dead heat in the poll last week between Otabek Shukarov and Jiangsu and their many underage keepers. That means we've actually got the first ever six-way tie, I believe it works out at, in the Phenomenon of the Week poll. The one thing that does leave certain is, Brandon, you've got a clear shot at the first nomination this week. So who or what are you going to call on as your phenomenon of this week?
So I will then, going first, I'll lead us into our next topic. And while I was originally thinking it should go to the person who took the video of the painting of the grass in Wuhan, I'm going to give it to actually the second time in only 4 weeks. I'm going to, or only four rounds. I'm going to give it to Li Tie. I don't know, last time I gave it to his hair, so I guess it's not necessarily to him. But Li Tie calling out his own club for their management of their field, it's not something we see often in the CSL, but Li Tie has shown a bit of a rebellious side down the years and did so once again.
So we've had Li Tie's hair, now you saluted his backbone. Are you going to have like a whole Bionic Man of nominations over the year?
We'll see how it works out.
Moving on from that, Cam, who or what are you going to nominate this week?
I'm going to cast my nomination and down your way, Steve. I'm going to nominate Port Adelaide Aussie Rules Football Club. They claimed on their Twitter that they are going to play an AFL game in Shanghai, and this is the first time a Western sport or Western club will have played in China. And I just think this is such a ridiculous thing to say for so many reasons, not least of which because Australia is actually in the Eastern Hemisphere, not the West, and they don't seem to have heard of this thing called Asian Champions League, which has had Australian teams playing in China for 10 years now, and of course Sydney are due to come to Shanghai later on this month to play a Western game or whatever the hell that is against SIPG. So yeah, Port Adelaide and their phenomenal insularity.
Far be it from Australian rules football to show a lack of self-awareness. Okay, it's a mixed bag. I'm going to go with a more boring and traditional football-related nomination, both for scoring a lovely backheeled goal and just really confusing me by being a lovely bloke who doesn't have much drama about him and can actually succeed in China, hence being the most atypical Shenhua signing of ages. For me, it's got to be Ighalo this week. So, let's see how the listeners want to vote. As always, we encourage any alternative suggestions and write-ins as well. I'm sure that a number of those will actually be related maybe to the next topic, and Brandon has foreshadowed it. We've seen some... It's remarkable, you know. We talked on the pod just last week about how games never get called off, and we saw a very late postponement in the Wuhan-Henan game. Huge controversy here. Lots for us to kind of unpick and discuss the repercussions and ramifications of it. I mean, firstly, for anyone who's not on top of this story, Cam, can you briefly get us up to speed on what happened?
Well, Wuhan were supposed to play a game against Henan this past weekend. Unfortunately, the game was called off just 24 hours before kickoff. That, in some countries, that might not be considered too much of a late delay, but in China, of course, with the distances involved, fans of Henan, many of them were already in Wuhan the day before, preparing to come and watch the game the next day. So that caused a lot of consternation. Also, of course, this is a CSL where, as everybody knows now, there's a lot of money sloshing about, and it seems ridiculous that a surface can be so bad that the game has to be postponed. And there's also another complication which says that according to some interpretations of the rules, including Henan's, the Wuhan are obliged to provide a proper surface in which to play the game, and if not, they're supposed to forfeit a match 3-0. So Henan are pushing for this, but it seems that the teams have agreed another day already when to play the match, so it's unclear what's going to happen. And of course, as Brandon said in the phenomenon section, there was also footage of Wuhan furiously painting the pitch green to try and hide the complete lack of any grass on it, so it's a bit of a ridiculous shambles.
So yeah, thanks for the summary, Cam. There's a lot to get into. I mean, firstly, Brandon, is the controversy here how late the notice was behind the cancellation, or kind of how shambolic this attempted cover-up with the painting of the grass was?
Well, I think it should be a little of both. You know, the cover-up, we've seen things like this before, but what it really comes down to is how late it is and how it seems that because the two teams ended up, for whatever reason, amicably agreeing to this delay, there's not going to be any sort of punishment, fine, playing the match behind closed doors or something for Wuhan, who it's really all on them. And am I mistaken, or did the CSL not implement something starting last year dealing with sort of pitch conditions, everything, putting money aside for each of the clubs from the sponsorship money specifically to go to management of pitches and making sure that the quality of the fields was up to par? I thought there was something like this, and it's just shocking that we're seeing these issues continue, not only in the CSL, also in League One, while matches are still being played on these terrible pitches. But yeah, that now we're seeing actual matches being canceled because of the bad conditions is just shocking.
Yeah, Cam, do you think we need to blame the club here or the CFA or, you know, the local government who ultimately own the stadium and have been, you know, running these other events and failing to get things prepared. There's a lot of finger pointing going on. There's a company who are conveniently not local who are being scapegoated for lacking to maintain, you know, the integrity of the pitch as well. I mean, everyone has a bit of blame here. Who do you think should shoulder the most?
I think the buck stops with the club. They are ultimately responsible for making sure that, come what may, there is a surface to be played on which is playable. And from what we can see, that they failed to do that. Of course, the issue really is with the late cancellation. It was a cancellation for a reason which was not unforeseen. They've had plenty enough time to rectify this problem. As Brandon rightly said, last time we were talking about a cancellation in Liaoning, but they are still have winter up there and there's been some snow and whatnot. Wuhan is a different part of China and kind of right in the middle, and there's not a weather issue this time, so they've really got to carry the can. I think Brandon's right. I think there was some new stipulations introduced for clubs to invest in the actual hardware, but of course, as far as I know, I don't think any club or very, very few clubs own the stadium, so there's a disconnect there. But I think most important of all is whatever the rules are, and it seems Hunan does believe the rules say that they should be forfeited the game, the rules should be implemented consistently and fairly. That's the most important thing, and if they are, then this kind of thing's less likely to happen again in the future.
It's also kind of funny that this happened in a match against Hunan, which has been, over the years, one of the most egregious sides when it comes to pitch condition, especially in early on in the season. So I think maybe they were a little more lenient and a little more willing to grant Wuhan a wide berth because of that.
That's exactly what I thought as well, actually, because as you said, Hunan's, they've had a terrible pitch for years. But they have cleaned up their act. I noticed when Shenhua played them 2 weeks ago, the surface looked pretty much pristine, actually. But still, they may have well thought, well, it'd be a case of call it the pot calling the kettle black if they were to get too upset at Wuhan for this.
Yeah, I mean, people in glass houses, and I think you made a good point, Cam. None of the clubs really own their own stadium, and that's kind of a huge issue for them in terms of lots of things, the fan experience, you know, how much control they have over the quality of the pitch and so on. Am I giving them a bit too much sympathy here, Brandon?
I don't think that it's necessarily because of that. You know, yeah, there are issues from time to time with certain sides, especially, you know, the Beijing, Shanghai, Guangzhou, where, you know, concert issues and other events. But generally, the teams that have these a lot of the teams are actually, the stadiums are all owned in conjunction with the city government or whatever or managed by a consortium that actually owns Hongko or manages Hongko Gongti, I believe Tianhe. I know the Tianjin Olympic Stadium, and these stadiums have something fairly in common that they all tend to be in fairly good shape. You know, there are issues, like I said, with concerts, with scheduling and stuff, and sometimes that affects the pitch. But even then, they've tried to manage things. But that's only true of a handful of teams, and the rest of the sides, often there's just no investment, no interest, no stakeholder in the situation to bother to keep up these sort of very simple things like pitch condition.
Yeah, and ultimately it's kind of the players with some of the injuries we've seen over the years and the fans with this late cancellation who are the ones who suffer. Interesting that you mentioned stakeholders, because this ties for me also into a chat we've been meaning to have for a couple of weeks now about the City Group and their encroachment into Chinese football. You know, they've taken over a China League 2 club up there in Chengdu. they've had an early reality check already with them having some kind of stadium and location issues of their own. Do you think this highlights how difficult it is to kind of invest in Chinese football? And do you think they might be having second thoughts already, Cam?
It depends why. I mean, they're investing in Chinese football because two reasons. One is they're trying to increase the brand of Man City, and the other is Sheikh Mansour, who owns, ultimately, is the owner of Man City, or the holding company. He has his geopolitical agenda as well, to make nice with China. So I'm sure a stadium where they actually play is, at the end of the day, is probably not that important. But that said, I know there's the football-specific stadium, which is, I forget the name of the town or the small city it's in. I mean, it's said to be in Chengdu, but it's actually quite far from the centre. At least on one level, it was good to see that facility being used, because I think it was built for the Women's World Cup. I think was it 2004, something like that? And it's basically been empty for a long time, and I don't know. There's so many different angles to this. I'm kind of pretty sceptical about Man City and the City Group, but for as to how they've started, they've certainly already encountered that things are not straightforward in China.
Yeah, and I mean, not many of their overseas investments outside of Manchester have done terribly well either, if you look at silverware. However much money you throw at a League Two club, there's no guarantee of promotion as well. I mean, you can't parachute any of your kind of foreign academy players in there either. Were you surprised that they started this low down the pyramid, Brandon?
Yeah, I'm pretty shocked. I was expecting all along that this would be something that they would want to end up in Shanghai. You know, Chengdu isn't the worst of picks. It's not one of the first tier cities in China, but is a fairly large second tier city, and it's one that isn't really served well. It's a laid back city, a city that needs more entertainment, where a football club has had decent success over the years, but it's been a long time since they've had a top flight team, and even longer since they've had a decent team. That said, you know, League Two, because like you said, there are no foreigners involved. It's really a matter of who you have on the team and maybe who you can get in loans from League One or CSL sides into your team. But because there isn't a lot of investment at that level, there's almost none. It tends to be only a couple of sides that really want to go up that will battle for the couple promotion spots each year. So it is possible to get yourself into League One. The issue becomes that to get from League One into the CSL takes a lot. We've seen a lot of teams invest pretty heavily and still not make it up there unless you really go over the top like Evergrande did, like Shenzhen did. And so it seems like a lot of effort for not so much payoff. They're really getting themselves into a bit of a quagmire, it seems.
I think they started in League Two because they had to. I think if they had the chance, they would have taken a CSL team in the bottom part of CSL or a CL1 team. But I never thought for a second they would play in Shanghai or Beijing. I just can't really see that happening.
I completely disagree. I think there's no reason why they couldn't come in and put in the money and offer big enough for a side like Shenzhen or even the Beijing, what used to be Beijing BG or something, or even Renhe. There's plenty of teams out there that with the money that Citigroup has, that they could come in and they could put in a decent enough offer to convince management to go elsewhere, because you know these companies that own these teams aren't really in it for the long haul per se.
Sure, but they weren't allowed to do that. They would have done it because that is the obvious route, but they didn't do it. There must have been something stopping them. It must have been some kind of policy or Shanghai FA or Beijing FA said, no, we don't want him here.
Okay.
I kind of don't really want to talk about it. I just dislike franchise football. I dislike City Group. I just think everything about them is just,
yeah.
It's just franchise. I just hate it.
I don't have a problem with it per se. I just think it's, I mean, they're starting out in League Two, and it's going to be a hard slog to get up to League One. And then if they get up to League One, then it's going to be even harder to get into the CSL. And it's just, they're not going to build fans for Man City. It just doesn't make a lot of sense why they're going to bother here.
I want to be charitable and say, well, it's good they're starting at the bottom, but I think they're doing that simply because they've been forced to do it. Because, like you say, they've got the money to have entered at a far higher level, but for some reason, they didn't. So you often see this kind of Western club involvement in Chinese football saying the arguments are things like, yeah, it can help the game develop and improve training, improve commercialization, but all these things can happen without having to have some franchise parachute into the league, I think. In that way, I just think it's completely unnecessary. But well, if it can bring some interest to that level, then okay, I guess it's better than nothing.
I mean, that's how the Citigroup works, though. So that there's nothing that we weren't expecting in that. I just think it's it's sort of they're based in the middle of nowhere, basically in Sichuan, and like I said, I mean they could potentially build a fan base, but there are a lot of teams sort of struggling, sort of going back and forth in Sichuan right now that it's sort of who's going to be the first to really get up to the top flight and win everyone over. It's not for sure that it's going to be this team.
I just think it's not all, I don't know if they're just putting all their attention on Manchester City at this point, because none of their, I don't know enough about the MLS side actually, but like their Australian team has basically never won anything and has all kinds of problems and bad PR among their own fans, and they're letting their own youth products go, and this, like, their strategy outside of Manchester and buying the Premier League is absolutely incoherent and amateurish, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't really, I just think it's just, it's kind of like a clash of interest. Like, you've got this group who owns football teams everywhere. It's just not what football's about, in my opinion. Especially the New York team. I mean, in this MLS, you've got New York Cosmos, right? Well, not MLS. They're in, I think they took a year out, but they were in
They were never in the MLS, and they have no fans.
I know they weren't in MLS. That was just a little tongue. But the thing is, they have a, they have like some history and culture behind them. Again, in the 70s, they were getting tens of thousands of fans when Pele played there. I know that was a long time ago, but you've seen the success in this MLS of the Sounders, the Timbers, teams which are reincarnations of NASL era teams. So I was think it was kind of unusual that the MLS ignored that, and I think there's a lesson for all of in the Chinese football as well, is that it just underscores the importance of having some kind of tradition and history to latch on to. And if you have that there, then you should use it. Obviously, with Sichuan football, they had a team years ago. I think it was Sichuan, was at Guangdong. They sadly went out of business about, I think, 10 years ago now. So getting back to the point, football in Sichuan has kind of been in the doldrums for a long time, so at the very least, perhaps this can help kickstart the game there. But I just think it's just not necessary to rely on like a foreign club franchise to do that.
Well, but that said, I mean, there's some things that
RB Leipzig argument, yeah.
Well, but there's some things that are sort of you can build comparisons to, but this isn't really one of them. You know, the NYCFC is actually does better than their longer standing rivals that are now the Red Bull side. It's funny, New York has two MLS franchises, and they're both franchises of these international conglomerates. But NYCFC does slightly better. But, you know, even Sichuan, they have a history of this because, you know, there was some cooperation back in the day. You know, the Chengdu team used to be the Chengdu Blades, Sheffield United. Yeah, there was that cooperation. Tears, that didn't go very well. But yeah, it's sort of, you know, so there is that history of English investment in Sichuan football, if you really want to look at it from that point. But it's going to be tough. It's going to be a slog. And I see them, it's not necessarily the football that's driving things here, for sure.
But presumably not making a profit either, because I mean, I think Chinese football is the worst possible investment vehicle for overseas owners. It's a bizarre one. I think it was inevitable at some point. We will watch how it works out with kind of bated breath. But don't expect to see them in the top flight anytime soon, seems to be the consensus. I think that's plenty enough for us to talk about in a mixed and varied bag of a pod once again. We'll have some more, hopefully, wonder goals to look back on, hopefully some more upsets and a bit of ACL action as well next week. But listeners, that is your lot for this week. As always, if you do enjoy the pod and the insight and the perspective on a wide range of issues that the guys share with you on a weekly basis, please do write a review, share the pod with friends, and consider donating on Patreon. You can find all of those links on the website
as usual.
And on our Twitter
feed.
Look
forward to next time.
Cam, thanks as always for your insight from Shanghai and managing to find the dark clouds in a 5-1 victory.
Yeah, cheers, Steve. Good stuff. Thanks, everybody.
And Brendan, thanks for not really having to stick up for the CFA this week. It's been a bit free hit of a pod for you.
Yeah, and also haven't really talked very much about how Guan is undefeated through the first four matches.
Got that one slipped in at the end there. Well, we'll see how they're doing next week and we will regroup. But for this week, this has been your Chinese football podcast brought to you by Wild East Football. And I've been your host, Steve Crooks.
The Chinese football podcast brought to you by Wild East Football.
全场比赛结束了，我们终于出现了。